Welcome to the Rearview Mirror Podcast, looking back on all that we don't know and a few things that we do.
Okay, we are live, so.
Live, checking the mic, checking the mic.
You're doing it slower in your older age.
Mic check.
All right, it's a new episode, Tom. I don't know the number anymore. I've lost track, but we're
more
rolling
than 10.
Today. It's more than 13, I think, but I'm not 100% sure.
So here's a question for you.
Great. nice way to start today. Good. Let's go.
Since we're in double digits, I'm wondering, we talked about this Saturday night a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
The things we have in common, we really have in common, but we don't have a lot of outside of these area interests in common.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Our hobbies are different.
Yes.
Our friend groups are different.
Yeah, that's true. That's
you know,
true.
All those things. So are we eventually going to run out of things to talk about, to give back to the people?
Maybe we have and don't even realize it
so
yet.
We're just still talking worthless.
Yeah. Yeah.
Worthlessness.
It's possible, I suppose. Yeah. I don't know. It's funny. Ever since you asked that question, I've thought about that a couple times going.
Which part?
About, you know, are we going to run out of topics on the podcast? Because, you know, as we've said so many times, there is no topic sheet, which some people think that's the dumbest thing in the world. Why don't y'all always know what you're talking about and planning it months in advance? But that was one of the commitments we made on the front end, is we wanted to just be organic and raw and in the moment. And I think last two or three times we've gotten together, there's been part of me going, okay, is this the last one? And yet we always find something to talk about. So I'm just kind of crossing my fingers and see what happens today.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, I don't know. I told you this at the beginning. I don't know that I can come up with material for every week.
Right. Right.
And I remember this. You've done a whole lot more than I have. But back in the day when I was with a nonprofit, I did a ton of public speaking.
Yes.
And, man, there were times, you know, ad lib stuff that went well and sometimes it didn't. Plan stuff went well. But inevitably, this is what I remember from public speaking. And I was a communications major in college. And so I had to speak all the time for that.
Yeah.
The things I write down in my preparation that I think are just going to kill it. I mean, it's almost like clockwork. They just go over like a lead balloon. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's like you can't recreate the dynamic or the flow. And it's just, man, I say something, I expect everybody to laugh or get a reaction. They're dead. And then you're like a stand-up guy on stage and you got nothing.
Yeah. The only thing I'm like a stand-up guy is the stand-up guys that are crashing in those moments, right? Like, oh my gosh, there are those moments, you know, in my public speaking as well, where I've thought, okay, this story is really going to bring the point home. And one out of a dozen times it maybe did, but gosh, those other times it'd be like, that's the greatest thing. You look out and somebody is yawning as you're getting to your punchline of your story. And you just realize public speaking is a weird thing, period.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It truly is. I think that's why I'm grateful that we've done this together, because I think you pushed me not to be worried about being prepped so much, because that's my natural bent because of what I've done vocationally.
Right.
And yet what I've enjoyed more than what I've done vocationally is honest conversations. So, yeah. You know, when we started, we said we'll do 8 or 12 and see what we think. We've passed that number. I mean, we may be coming to the end, and that's okay too.
Well, so how do you want to do the finale today then?
it's coming today.
What do you want to do?
Well, I think today's the day when you go ahead and pull it out. Now you brought it. I had a beer with my younger self that you've written.
Well, yeah. Well, then this will be the finale, and it'll be very short.
I'm kidding you.
Yeah, no, I'm about 98% that I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, and I'm 100% cool with that.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to be.
I wouldn't invite you to do it though.
I'm not feeling that.
Yeah, that's all right.
I don't know why. Yeah. We could talk about it, but I don't know why.
Yeah, there is a resistance though. For you, is it on the looking back or is it talking about something that you've looked back on publicly?
I'm sure there's some of both of that, but honestly, I've thought about it a couple of times and I just can't seem to get started. Like nothing's clicking in my brain. Yeah. Usually stuff like that, I can go right away and start going back. And, you know, I don't mind talking about my life and parts of my past, but I can't really get my head around that one.
Yeah, and that's cool. I mean, that's fine with me. I was just curious.
And my memory's not that great anyway, so that's going to be, and probably I wouldn't just have one beer with my younger self, because my younger self drank beer and myself now drinks beer. So
it could be a very slurred conversation.
And no telling where it would go. I'm not sure any of that's appropriate for a podcast.
Out of my love for you, you're never going to get to share that.
We'll see. Got time. If we continue on for season two, okay. If the network picks us up for season two, then yeah. Maybe
we're in negotiations right now.
Yeah, we did have a request for some merchandise, and
tell me about that.
Well, you saw it. Someone emailed us.
Oh, you're right.
Let's talk about merch. I don't know. I don't have any thoughts on merch yet, yeah. But I'm sure we've got somebody in that department, in our merchandising department.
Oh, I'm sure.
That can
and I'm sure
work
the demand
on that.
Will be overwhelming for it.
Man, I need to let my financial guy know that there's going to be an influx of cash coming in to figure out something to do with.
Oh, you're hilarious.
I don't have anything necessarily on my mind today. Hey, so you asked me about the beer with my younger self. That's not going to happen. Your personal trainer visits. How are we doing on that?
Great. Every week I'm there. I'm enjoying it. I was supposed to start this week, but I had a little procedure on Monday. So they told me not to do anything Monday or Wednesday. So I'll be back Friday. And then next week I'll be going 3 days a week. And so just one day. I've been doing one day with him. So I'm going to start next week. I'll be doing 3 days a week.
So what are you doing with him? What do you like about it?
Probably the accountability is the biggest thing for me. Just, I know where I need to be and I know that I'm going to show up. He's going to tell me what to do. Probably my favorite things I'm doing right now, and this is going to expose my ignorance because I can't tell you the names of everything, but are they TRX bands? Is that right?
I think there are things called TRX bands.
They look like ratchet straps, some big fat ratchet. They're wrapped around, some big metal apparatus about 7-8 feet up in the air, and they got handles on them. And I love doing these things. Push my feet out far in front of me. So I go back to like a 45-degree angle, where my arms are fully extended. And then it's chest and back stuff, right? And so then I just pull myself up to about, most of the way up to my, like a backwards set push-up, I guess. But the stretch in that and the, he's having me doing higher reps right now because it's just body weight. But I'll get to 14 or 15 and I'm like, oh gosh, I am burning. It feels a good burn. Yeah. But I love that particular movement. I think one of the things I realized is just how tight I am. My legs have always been tight, but even up my thoracic area, the upper part of my chest. And so I just feel like that's such an opening movement. I'm loving doing that.
Yeah.
And then the last 12 minutes or so of the day, we always do some kind of little high cardio thing with a treadmill and farmer's carries or, something like that. And I've always loved that stuff. Yeah. I won't do it on my own, but there's some part that this movement, sweat hard that I really enjoy that. So he's built a plan now for all 3 days, 3 days a week that I'll be in there doing. And then 2 days a week, we'll be doing something smaller, but still more activating at home, which I've kind of been doing that already, mostly stretching, mobility stuff. So I'm enjoying it. Thanks for asking. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm eating clean still. I reached yesterday. No. This morning? Yeah, this morning reached a whole new low for me, like 30-year low on my weight.
Oh, wow.
And again, it's just come off really slow right now because I'm still eating. I'm eating enough calories, eating healthy. But that's kind of fun. So
that's good.
It's working. I'm hopeful that by the end of summer, I'll be down to a weight where, again, I know it's not about the number, but it sort of is about the number too. Like there's just a number I'd love to get down to and feel like, okay, good. Muscle tones there a little bit more and more than anything, the flexibility is what I'm, flexibility, mobility. So feeling good about it.
It's nice that it's summer too. So you can get out and sweat and
it's easy to,
I
went for a walk at Carton yesterday after work and just, I'm halfway around it's just a little mile lap, did a couple of those laps halfway around it. I'm going, okay, the sweat's going to come today easily, but I love that. I love that feeling.
Yeah. We've decided to, take walking in a different direction. So Jen and I came up with this thing. I hope she doesn't mind me sharing it. I can ask, our caveat, and then we can cut it out if we don't like it. But we go on a walk through our little downtown area. We go park at the park, walk through our downtown area, end up at the factory, go to Mojo's Tacos, and have cheese dip and salsa.
Perfect.
Iced tea.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And then
walk home.
Great.
I feel like that's kind of a win-win.
It is. It is. That's like Laura and I, we have a thing that we'll start doing now that the weather's warm. We've got these old people bikes, I call them. We bought a couple years ago.
With the big curved thing in the middle.
Not
and
that
you got
bad.
The basket on the front
not
with,
that
the,
bad, but
with
close.
The bell.
Not that bad, but close. Yeah, we're not at the beach. We're not fully at beach cruisers yet, but they're cruisers, so setting up tall. And, we'll ride out of our neighborhood, cut across the one busy road, and then we're just in neighborhoods. And it's only about 3.5-4 miles, so it's not like it's a long ride. But we get all the way down, and we'll end up down in Berry Farms. And so, we'll maybe eat dinner down there. But the night usually ends with going to Witt's and getting a little frozen custard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't know barbecue.
Yeah, there's the Witt's barbecue, but there's Edley's barbecue down there that we've hit sometimes. No. But then we'll get a little frozen custard and ride back. So it feels like a win-win.
So Witt's will make one of the sweet things I do love that I've loved since I was a kid. You can get at Witt's a chocolate malt.
I did not know they did malts.
Oh, my gosh.
How did you get hooked on malts?
I remember all my family. My mom, when she picked me up from school when I was in kindergarten, my grandparents, we would all, the malts were very popular in that day. We had the Tasty Freeze, Dairy Queen, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a chocolate malt, something about that malted milk flavor I love.
So is that the difference of a malt and a shake?
Yes, it's very different.
Okay.
And I still love a malt. And so sometimes I'll think about that at night, go down there and run down to Witt's and get one, then go into a diabetic coma.
Well, call me anytime. I'll be glad to zip down there with you.
Yeah. I don't need to drag anybody else into my sugar abyss. But God, I love those. That reminded me of that.
That's surprising to me, though, because you're so not a sweet guy.
I know. I hate to flaunt that to to those that are. Again, it's not discipline.
Yeah.
There's not many things that are sweet that I like.
Chocolate malt would.
There are a couple things. We have a friend that makes one dessert, and she gives me a hard time. She says, "You've typecast me into this dessert. It's all I can bring." And so now we're kind of on this little, detente where we're just not moving from our positions, and she's not making it when we get together.
Friendship's on thin ice right now.
Yeah, I had to tell her the other night. I need you to bring that next time. Okay,
I'm gonna. What is it now? And it got me curious.
It's called mulva pudding.
Mulva.
It's a South African pudding dish. It's kind of got the texture of a Mexican flan.
Okay,
I can't even describe the flavors.
Wow.
It's vanilla and some other things. It is absolutely incredible.
And you just love it.
I would skip dinner for it.
It's really? So good.
Yeah.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Oh my gosh.
So the chocolate malt. On occasion, a hot chocolate chip cookie if the mood's right. But most of the time, I'm snacking late at night.
It's salty, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. That's good. I think that's probably a really good thing that you don't have the vice of, but I'm not going to give mine up fully.
Because I've got so many others I don't need. I mean.
That's fair.
Yeah. The list is long of vices that I do have.
That's fair.
What hobbies do you and Laura like to do together? You have hobbies, interests together?
Yeah, I think that's part of this empty nest season the last several years has been about, is trying to figure those things out. What's wrong?
I feel like I'm like held hostage by where this mic is and where I'm sitting right now. Okay, so I don't really know how to move it, because then it comes down and somebody told me I was too quiet on the. God, I mean, this is like, I think she's doing this on purpose.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, my guess is she's somewhere just laughing.
All right.
What'd you say? Oh, hobbies. You know, we have all these aspirational hobbies. I think that's what we both realize, is that we have hobbies.
That's a really good category.
When we do it, we love it, but we just don't execute well on them. But this time of year, we seem to more than, I don't know, winter time is just a blah time, but what we do, we love to hike together. I'm not talking about like aggressive.
Is that aspirational or you do that?
No, we'll do that. We'll go
out
there.
What are your aspirational hobbies?
Oh, I don't know. They probably all fall in the same category. I don't know why I said that now. Anyway, but I think the bike riding thing has been a blast. We'll take our bikes down to, is it Shelby Bottoms? Yeah, down in Nashville. And it's just this forever long concrete trail, and it's beautiful, a lot of shade. Do that, or go out to, through our neighborhoods. Or there's a couple other places we've gone up by the library, Brentwood Library, back in that old Concord area. There's some great trails. So we do enjoy when we get out and do something activity-wise together. That seems one of the things. I think the majority of our time, when we have a Friday or Saturday free, we'll find a way to say, hey, what can we do with our family, with grandkids especially? That it's weird to say that, but in some ways it feels like they're our hobbies. Like Josh, our oldest, and I were talking this morning about building maybe another part of a swing set out at their place, or almost like a Ninja Warrior obstacle course, age appropriate for the grandkids, out in some woods by his house. To me, if getting to build something, that would be so fun. Now, Laura would come alongside that of enjoying it and the pleasure being around the kids, but the actual building of it.
She's not going to put a tool belt on or anything. Or
I don't know. She'd put a paintbrush in her hand, but probably not a tool belt. Yeah. What about you guys? Besides, I mean, I know y'all do spend a lot of time with friends around food. You guys are good. No, you had a great group of friends.
We've got some foodie friends. That's for sure.
Different friends.
Yeah,
friend groups that way.
Yeah, but we do.
Other things that y'all enjoy together.
I mean, we do, same thing, similar things. We like outside activities. We do like to hike, like to walk. Jen's a tennis player, so we go hit balls.
Oh, that's right.
You know, and she played a match today. So, you know, we'll probably, now the weather's good, we'll probably start back on the weekends. Just go hit for a little bit.
That's great.
It's good exercise. It's fun. We like to travel together. We're good travel companions, that's generally great. Speaking. We do like to eat and have fun, go meet people and and enjoy that.
Yeah.
So that's a fun thing. I don't know. What else? She loves playing games. I think she wished we would do more couples games things.
Yeah.
I know you do too. So try to make that happen.
Oh, gosh. More. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have more games in our closet, our storage closet, that I'm sure some of them have never been used. And I'm probably the barrier to that. Once I get into a game, I can really enjoy it. But the thought of, hey, honey, why don't we play cards or play a game night? That's never going to come out of my mouth initially, I don't think.
And mine either. So why is that? I wonder.
I don't know. Maybe we're just old curmudgeons.
Well, that's true. But you're not a curmudgeon. You're old, but you're not a curmudgeon.
Yeah,
I'm more of a curmudgeon than you are.
Maybe,
and
maybe it depends on the topic.
Yeah. I feel the same way. And I don't know why. I've tried to explain this to our friends, and I don't want to be the barrier to that. So,
yeah.
And we've done it before. We'll probably do more of it. But
yeah.
There's something about the end of the day having to turn. I feel like I have to turn my brain back on.
Yeah, maybe.
And I don't it's know like, man, I got to think and be into it and figure things out.
I think it sounds really boring. We're going to sit at a table and play a game. You know, I'd rather talk about something. But then, you know, and we've been together with some other couples sometimes when we'll do this. But once the game gets started, usually I'm like, okay, but I can get into this. And but some of that I think is the competitor in me figuring out, how am I going to win this thing? You know? But then I feel like, if I'm not careful, I'll either, you know, get mad because I haven't won, or I'll cheat. And neither of those are really look good on me. So
do you have competitiveness still at this age?
It surprises me where it comes up. Not a lot. I feel like most things I'm just like, go with the flow. It's fine. But there'll be certain games with certain people that I'll feel like, okay, I need to win this. And I don't know what that's about.
Wow.
I mean, I just laugh at myself. I usually am aware enough of it going, you really don't need to win this. What? Just chill. Be okay.
Yeah, let your grandkids win one time.
I'm not very competitive there. I'm not competitive at all there. I remember one of the greatest compliments one of my cousins gave about my dad. Gosh, I bet I was 11 or 12 years old, but I remember my cousin Cindy said to my dad, and she was like 18, probably a freshman in college, probably had her first general psych class. That's where my guess is this comment came from. She goes, Uncle Ray, you're so good at letting all of us kids win. You never have to win. And research says that's going to keep you happy and make you live a long time. And for some reason, I was like, oh my gosh, my dad doesn't always have to win with kids. And I don't know. I've always thought about that. And I think I don't have a big need. I didn't with my kids that I didn't have to beat them. And then part of it too was, you know, I took pride in being able to run faster than my boys until they're like six. And then I realized,
that didn't last long for you.
I'm never going to, I can't beat them.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Especially in running. Oh my gosh. I do remember the day when Josh was 6 years old and we would kind of go through these little jog runs just around the neighborhood, not with discipline, not for any, whatever. And I remember one day he said, Dad, let's race. And I thought, oh, sweet boy, okay. And I remember going, oh my gosh, I can't keep up. So 6, 7 years old, I raced fast. Two fast boys and one really strong young man is what I'll call Jacob. Because he would tell you his idea of running was from one end of the basketball court to the other, and that was about it.
And I watched him play basketball. Sometimes that second end of the court didn't get as much attention as the other one, which I totally respect on that. Yeah.
Well, it's so fun.
I remember the first time Will beat me in the driveway in basketball, and he was probably 13 years old, you know, and I thought I'd wear the crown for a long time. But it really secretly I wanted him to win, but I wasn't going to let him win.
Right. Played hard against him.
Yeah, gosh. I remember thinking, damn, he's too big and too fast, and I can't.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to cheat.
Yeah.
he's earned the crown, so it was good.
There's old man strength, there's old man cheating, right?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. But, man, my desire for that's...
I know. You want to see your kid surpass you in everything, you know?
Oh, yeah. I think so.
Yeah. So proud of that when I get to see those boys. Daughter, same way.
Yeah, there comes a time where, I mean, I got help from my daughter on something today in the work world, and it was great, and she's brilliant in that way, and Will could have helped too, I think, but this is more probably in her wheelhouse for sure, and It's interesting. Do you run across dads that don't want to hand over the mantle?
Let me say this way. I've seen
in your
that.
World.
Yeah. I think there's, it's really sad. You know, I probably. I see these men who are, I think, foundationally so insecure that they have to be bigger no matter what. And it's tragic because you get to a certain age is going to kick your butt every time.
Undefeated.
Get to a certain age, exactly. You get to a certain age where your need to be competitive, your need to win at all costs is nothing but butt ugly.
Yeah.
Nobody looks at it and go, isn't that sweet? But I can think of, I guess the stories I see more are the 35, 45, 50-year-old men in my office who are dealing with a dad still that's that way. You know, it's often around the stupidest topics too. You know, it's like, Dad, we really want to have a conversation about your driving, or Dad, we want to have a conversation about you, you know, your memory starting to slip. And, you know, I've got some compassion for the memory slip part of it, but it's indicative of, I think what can happen is guys who are just like, no, you know, I'm the father, you're the son. And I'm like, there's a point when that language, like we talked about a couple weeks, that language dies.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a trump card to play with my kids anymore.
Right.
But that's a sad moment, I think, in the life of any man.
Seen it a couple of times in the work world too, where the son, you know, family owned business or family run business.
Great example.
Dad can't get out of the way.
Yeah.
And let the son or daughter.
Oh yeah.
Run it and. Yeah. Well, you're right. There's something that's just not age appropriate.
Yeah.
About that.
Yeah.
And the dynamic, even around the table, like recognizing your kids' strengths, letting them be the, you know, letting them be the funny one, letting them be the storyteller.
Yeah.
You know, not having to have the glory and the credit. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm entering into that. I got nieces and nephews and kids that are funnier than I am and better storytellers and. You know,
sit back and enjoy it.
I know, right?
It's the fruit of your labor, right?
Yeah.
I mean, at some level, you're just like, golly, look at what this generation can do.
And ask better questions and on a deeper level are good, you know? And so
I remember a few years ago, 2-3 years ago, I hadn't thought about this in a while, but I think it was at Thanksgiving is one holiday we were together as a family. And I enjoy those holiday things. And I try to think of something small but special to do around the table before we eat, whether it's a prayer or a reading or just something that I've seen that I just want to use to hopefully, you know, be of encouragement to the family. And so I had my little thing, and I usually will print it out, and I have it under my plate. And so when we sit down, I'll usually slide it out. Well, on this particular year, it was, I mean, there was nothing in me offended. I was proud beyond imagination because I don't remember if it was just two of my boys or if it was all the kids. I can't remember. I mean, I can remember what we did, but I can't remember who facilitated it. But I remember one of them just stood up and said, hey, before we gather around the table, can we just gather in a circle here? Yeah, I think it was Josh and Jake. I think they had done it. Maybe Jonathan helped. I'm sorry, I don't remember who. But anyway, doesn't matter. But they said, we brought this liturgy, and we would like to read it and have y'all just listen in. And it was this gorgeous, beautiful, like, prayer of blessing and thanksgiving. Mm. And I'm sitting there thinking, it's like the crown has been passed, to use your basketball example. And I was just so proud of my boys going, we think this is powerful. We think this is beautiful. We want to read it for our family. And this is the way we set a blessing. And I thought, my little piece of paper will never come out from underneath my plate today. There's no reason for it to.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, I'm so proud to see them want to own something that simple even.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry about that microphone. If
That's
you can't
okay.
see him, he is having to play with it constantly.
And it's kind of become a little habit thing here too.
Yeah.
And I'm usually not OCD about this kind of stuff, but it's just, it's causing me to have to move a lot. This is kind of my sit down, just relax time of day.
Okay.
With my espresso, the sit down and relax.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the line in Christmas Vacation where at the end and everything falls apart and Chevy Chase is having a terrible Christmas and he's in there with his dad. His dad's giving him the pep talk and says, you going to read the Christmas story, Dad? He goes, no, it's your house. It's you read it, you know, passing the mantle on to him, you know, and of course you go to sweet things that your family's done and I go to Christmas Vacation.
That's part similar.
Yeah. There we are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I think there is a, it feels like there should be just a natural passing of the torch in some of those family activities that I think gives life to the kids.
Yeah.
And you and me.
One of those I saw, and I'm probably thinking about this because I know Mother's Day is coming up soon. I don't remember how many years ago it was. I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years ago sometime. All the kids were out of the house and Mother's Day was coming. And, you know, as a dad, when the kids were little, I'd always make sure we did something for Mother's Day, you know, and do a craft or buy flowers or billions of little things you try to come up with to make sure the kids are loving mama. You know, just training them up, right? And to be fair, our kids were pretty good at that through, you know, high school days. I didn't feel like I had to ride them over it and anything. But as they all left the house and all starting their own lives, and even a couple of them, I think, were already a dad, so that their wives were the key mom in their life, you know, loving on them for being a mama. I remember we were coming up toward Mother's Day, and I remember thinking, okay, it's Saturday. I've not heard anything from the kids. And for a moment, I had this angst of like, you know, I need to rally the troops and remind them that tomorrow's Mother's Day and they need to reach out to their mother. And I immediately was like, so not my job.
Yeah.
Not my job. And then I felt nervous and anxious about it. Like, oh gosh, what's this going to do to Laura? Right? I mean, this is just the way at least my man brain works. And so I remember talking to Laura. I said, hey, babe, we need to talk about something because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It may be like nothing happens tomorrow because I've not heard about anything. And I don't know why I'm even telling you this other than, you know, you're not my mom, so I don't feel like I need to do something for your Mother's Day. I'll do what I always do.
I want some absolution.
But yeah, it's not my fault.
It's not my fault.
They don't do
it. You're going to have a bad day tomorrow, and it's not my fault. That's what
Laura,
I want to.
I am so blessed with her responses in places like that. She's like, look, I hope I can get to talk to him. I'd like to, but it kind of is what it is. It'll be okay. And remember, I remember the morning came, the afternoon came, and I'm like, oh gosh. And I think we went to Radnor and went for a hike together. We did something just to spend time and, you know, and she's doing good, but I'm feeling the way like, oh, come on. Because in my mind, I think I know what's supposed to happen. That's one of my common threads in this podcast. Looking in the rearview mirror, once again, I was wrong. And, you know, I feel like only one or two of our kids reached out to her that day. And then, you know, somebody on Monday said, Mom, I totally forgot. Sorry. You know, hope you had a good Mother's Day. And again, she rolled with it well.
Yeah.
And of course, then on Father's Day of the year, I don't think any of them even thought about me, which I'd kind of expected. That was fine. But it's been interesting, you know, I think releasing the need of me telling them what they need to do was a great thing for me to go, it's not my job. And I think watching them these last few years where they every year, you know, they're mindful of things with mom and at the same time, their priorities, their own family, as it should be. But they honor Laura beautifully. And many times we get together and it's just kind of this collective day for everybody or maybe a meal somewhere around that holiday. But I think my takeaway and what brought it to my mind was like, you teach your kids to do things that you value and that you think are important. And they're maybe even well-mannered things to do. But there comes a point when they truly own their lives. And you're just like, okay, whatever they do is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder too, if some of it is context, like, you know, coaching work world stuff, you try to sit back and think, okay, what are we doing that's working? What are we doing that's not working? And, and I think the same thing is true in life with holidays around Mother's Day, anniversaries, all that stuff, that we've created this arbitrary day.
Right.
That has expectations that we set, and there's nothing wrong. Let me go on record here. I'm a wholehearted supporter of celebrating mothers.
Yeah, right.
Okay. But probably more than one day.
Yeah.
And so I think for the moms, especially as your kids get older, just try to remember, would encourage them just to remember the other days and the other things.
Exactly. And the other many ways.
One day can't undo and it can't make up for all the other days, but there's lots of days
that's a great
goes into
word,
kids.
Steve.
Life and you know, and dads too, you know, it doesn't have to be like you were saying
the Hallmark holiday.
Yeah. You were saying last time that you guys tried to be flexible in holidays
when
your kids come, same kind of thing. I mean, Mother's Day is an important day and it's not the only day.
Right. I think that's a great statement you made that the context matters. You know, growing up in, you know, rural Southeast Tennessee, Mother's Day was always confusing to me as a young 12, 13, 14 year old boy, because we would wake up at the crack of dawn on that Sunday morning and we'd drive an hour and a half from our hometown up to where my dad's mom lived. And we'd have to be there for the 9:30 service or what, at 11 o'clock. I don't know, whatever time the church service was. Yeah. 9:30 for Sunday school, 11 o'clock for church. We had to be there for both of them. We never attended this church except on Mother's Day, but we had to be there because Grandma Helton was always in a contest with Grandma Fugit, this other grandma in the church, no relation to us, of who would have the most children and the most children in the church service. Because back in those days, if you remember, in the good old Southern Baptist world, they would have the mom with the oldest mom stand, the mom with the most children stand, the mom with the most grandchildren stand, and they each get a rose.
I didn't remember. We never did that.
Oh, see, Arkansas was even more advanced than Tennessee. Let me just tell you that then.
Boy, you got a lot of church scarring.
Oh, I got church crap. That's what this could be. I could be doing a podcast.
Maybe that'll be season two. All the church shit we're trying to get rid of. Golly.
But the competition in that. And I remember one day being probably 14 or 15 over at Grandma's house. Everybody was there, all eight children, all 16 grandchildren, you know, all the wives, everybody there. And, of course, all the wives are also
mothers.
But I remember that day thinking, why is everybody bringing gifts and giving them to grandma, but my mom's not getting a single gift from me or John or my dad? What's that about? Now, I'm sure there was something maybe done later in the day or whatever, but I remember thinking, why is the whole day around grandma? But I think that was the cultural conditioning. It's so big that the ultimate matriarch of the system needs to be held up high.
I'd venture to guess, too, your mom didn't love the fact that your dad was dragging everybody up there to celebrate his mom at that age versus...
There was so much tension always. I was always an intuitive little boy, and I may be totally wrong on this. It'd be fun to talk to my cousins about this sometime. But I have a hunch there wasn't a single mama that was there that loved being at grandma's house that day, including her two daughters. Yeah. I think they all were just like, what in the heck is this about? Yeah. But again, you don't want your kids growing up going, gosh, I've got to go do this obligatory thing to keep mom or dad or somebody happy. But boy, it'll show up in my office next week or the week after. Guarantee it does every year.
Yeah.
The hurt somebody had because an expectation wasn't met. And clarifying those expectations on anything, so important.
That's really good. It is. And I think the older you get, the more things you realize looking back in the rearview mirror that, man, we did that because of tradition or obligation.
Yes.
So now, at this stage of life, let's evaluate which one of those things are appropriate and still good.
Yeah.
And which ones of those expectations maybe need to go away or change.
Right.
Because now I'm a member of a family, mm-hmm. and I have a family.
Mm-hmm.
And my family's someday going to have a family.
Yeah.
And so all those things change.
Yeah.
Especially in the South, too. There are so many unspoken expectations and traditions that... sometimes you just need to get out of.
Well, and as we talk about this,
Or evaluate.
Right. I think what's shooting through my mind is, and I've seen this, gosh, so often, you get these young adults, 30s, 20s, 30s, 40s, that are married and trying to start their own family. And, let's say it's the husband who comes from a family where his parents divorced and then both parents remarry. Right. You with me already? And so suddenly you've got this poor guy who's got, okay, well, I've got my mom, but I've got my stepmom who is there a lot. But I've also got my wife's mom and I've got my wife. I mean, that pressure, if that's your situation, huge compassion, that's hard. And at some point, I think we got to be able to navigate it and just say, hey, I am grateful for the role you played as mom or mother-in-law or stepmom or grandmom or whatever. And here's what I'm going to choose to do. I'm going to train up my children to honor and love their mother today. So that's where my energy is going to be.
And as a practical matter, I can't go to six places on a Sunday.
Oh my gosh. But let's be honest, man. I see that happen on the holidays way too much.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to have brunch and then we're going to have lunch and then we're going to have a dinner. Then we're going to have dinner. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
That's just, again, that goes back to what we were like. We are not going to force our kids to be there on a day.
Yeah.
But my point of bringing that up is, man, that's a hard place to find yourselves in.
It's hard enough being a young couple.
Period.
With young kids. Being a young couple.
Mic
okay,
drop.
That's hard. Yeah, that's hard enough. It's the first 2 years of marriage.
Yeah.
It's learning.
A transition.
It's mm-hmm. a transition. Then you have kids, and now you're trying to navigate extended family.
Yep.
Some that are out of town and some that are in town. Both can be a blessing and a curse.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Heard somebody say, hey, man, the greatest thing that happens is my family moved to town. The worst thing that happens is my family moved to town. You know, it's like buying a boat.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Or a pickup truck.
My family would be the exception, of course, if they're listening out there. So,
Yeah. You'd like to live closer to everybody is what I understand.
I, I'm thinking about urban living, getting a condo downtown Nashville. That would be fun, but I'll never talk Jen into that.
Yeah.
I can't talk Jen into moving to a different part of Franklin because the drive would be too far from her friends.
Yeah.
she's that relational.
Yeah.
Now, Franklin, you can get from one side or the other in about 15 minutes. So I can't imagine a scenario where one would be too
horribly far away.
Right. Yeah. But, and just that proximity is appealing. So
do y'all talk at all about moving, like, seriously in this season of life? Kids out of the house and.
You know, we've kicked it around some. I think what we, I wouldn't want to do this. The pause you hear is I could live anywhere for a period of time.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that would love to, and we did talk about this. I could live in a different city for a year, different city every month for a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me, that'd be a blast.
Yeah,
I love exploring, traveling.
I've got that in me too. Yeah.
I absolutely love it. There's a part of Jen that would like that too.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk as much about moving right now as we, it's just been circumstantially harder with some things going on, but we love to travel. So I think we'd probably travel, rather than move. But I wouldn't, I think the circumstances would have to be right. Kids moving to a certain area, grandkids would draw us for sure, you know. And I would miss I'd certainly miss my friends and my golf guys and all that stuff if I lived in a different city. But
I think
the understanding is if you live in a different city and you have that kind of flexibility, you'll be able to come back.
Right, right.
The reality is we had dinner with some good friends. There's probably a couple of couples that we see every week or every 2 weeks, and every other friend group is probably once a month, once every 6 or 8 weeks.
Well,
they don't know if I'm here
for
those other 5 weeks or not.
Right.
You know? It's text, phone call, or whatever,
Right.
So, there's a part of me that gets juiced by thinking about moving somewhere.
Yeah.
But,
A little rambling man.
The part of packing up my home and all, it'd be more like Reacher, toothbrush and a driver's license, probably that kind of thing. Then I'd,
don't make me have to load that U-Haul.
Oh my God. Yeah. That I don't want to do.
Yeah. So. Well, and you're really clear about that. Your boundary on helping people move.
No, I've had a little back procedure. And even before that, there comes a point where,
Yeah. What's your line though?
You pay a certain price for a house, you can afford a mover.
That always makes me laugh.
If you need, I didn't coin that. This is from a friend of mine, but I do agree with it. If you need help, I will help you.
Yeah.
I've helped people move and I've helped my kids move.
Sure.
And I'm pretty good at manual labor. It's one of the few things I'm good at. But I'm going to look at the price you're going to pay for a house.
How much for the house?
Yeah. You're going to pay that for a house. And then you're going to, just because you're cheap, you want me to help you move. Yeah. That
I'm out.
Not at this age.
No, I love that. I love that.
Again, our listeners are going down from 80 to 3 to 2 to 1. But could you move? You wouldn't move. You got too many kids and grandkids.
No, I wouldn't move geographically. I wouldn't mind moving to a different house. I think there's a part of me that, I have so many multiple fantasies. Like, it's probably, I'd like to live on 4 or 5 acres of land, just have a little bit of space. There's part of me that would love to have no land to ever mow or take care of either. So, I go back and forth on that. I'd love to have a first floor master. Our house has always been, when we bought it for little kids and everything was upstairs and that was awesome. The problem is when I start thinking about moving, our house is, there was an old Amy Grant song said, "If these walls could speak," our house is filled with so many memories. And I think it'd be really hard for me to leave our house.
Really?
As much as I think, gosh, I'd love to go. There's that part of me that wants something new always. And what can I go start that'd be new? There's just so many memories in that place, and it's well worn. It's lived in well. And even now, the memories that we're building with kids and grandkids and the rooms that they know that's special room to go into, or the way they play in the backyard or off our little screened in porch. It's just like, I don't know. I have this fantasy of, every now and then being driving around and I'll see something on a little bit of land and certain style of house. And I go, okay, we need to call about that. And then I'll be like, do I really want to do that? So I don't know if I would or not.
So nostalgia would keep you from it.
That's probably a stronger card in my world than I realize sometimes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I could see that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I mean.
You have a lot of memories from your past that I've never heard that have come out in this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't feel like I'm a clutter guy. Like, I don't feel like I hang on to like a hoarder kind of stuff by any stretch. But it's funny when I growing up, books represented to me something. And I think the best thing to put towards, I think it represented knowledge and accomplishment and success. So I never would check out a book from the library. I'd buy a book. And so there was a time in our home when we had books in like probably 4 of the rooms in our little house and bookshelves built in and just tons. And I remember when it came time to, I thought, Laura was saying, can you just, get rid of some books? And And I mean, it was hard. It was like, I felt like, well, I remember where I got that book and why I got that book and what that book was. Everything had nostalgia to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember one day just going, okay, nostalgia or not, I got too many books, and gave away probably half my library in one fell swoop. And I remember going, okay, that didn't hurt. And so I'm just continuing to downsize on some of those things. Yeah. So it's not that kind of thing, but everything has a strong nostalgic memory to it for me.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think that would keep me in my house. We do have a ton of good memories and a lot of fun, and I'm sure there'd be a little bit of that. And I do. So we clean out the attic, you know, from time to time, and I look at stuff and found some old journals and some old stuff, you know, Bibles and things. And I thought, oh, man, I should keep those. And then I thought, well, why am I keeping those?
Yeah.
I haven't looked at them in 25 years. I don't really want to look through them.
Right. Yeah.
My kids aren't going to look through them. I mean, they might in a moment at my funeral or something, but then what are they going
to
do with them?
Right.
You know?
No context to discuss it with you, right?
Yeah. But yeah, I could move on. I could get over the nostalgia and move on.
And I think that's part of the...
I'm a hard-hearted person, I guess. That's where we're getting there.
One of the things Laura's parents did really well, and my dad not so much, and just different worldviews, was they were so intentional in downsizing stuff as they aged, and it made their moves and their transitions as they got older so much easier. And it was still work, but it was so much easier for the family. And my dad, God love him, I mean, you know, Depression-era baby, he had these JFG peanut butter jars, glass jars. Back in the day growing up, JFG was a coffee and peanut butter company in Knoxville, Tennessee. And he would keep these mayonnaise or peanut butter jars, glass jars with lids on, and he would just put extra screws, nails, nuts, bolts. And I remember when he was moving over here and we had to clean his stuff out, I think we threw away like probably like the equivalent of 10 gallons of screws and little, because I might need it, you know? And again, not a hoarder, but a lot of crap that he didn't get rid of. And of course, to be fair, represent him well on that one. We go down there and we decide we're going to spend a few days.
And we know you're fair when representing people.
Oh, well, especially my dad on this one. This is actually a good one. I'm not defending because he was a knucklehead in other places. But I remember him. We had a couple days blocked out and we were going to figure out what we're going to bring to Franklin and what we're going to leave there. And we're probably in the second room of sorting things. And I can see him. My dad hardly ever would get angry, but I could see something was percolating. And he went on the front porch, and he's pacing back and forth. And I go, I said, what's wrong? He goes, let's just burn it. Let's just get rid of all of it. I said, what? He goes, call Goodwill. Call somebody. Let's just give it all away. I don't need any of this shit. And I was like, what? He said, you got a bed for me, right? I said, oh. He goes, that's all I need. Grab my clothes, put them in that truck, and let's go to Middle Tennessee. I'm done.
He had an epiphany.
It was just like, this is all temporary. Mm. And we literally did that. We had some Goodwill guys come in. They cleaned everything out and took some stuff to the junkyard. And you know what? Or the dump, whatever. But I've always respected that. But I also don't want to, you know, I think that's part of this whole downsizing thing that I'm starting to think about. Like, okay, well, how do I not keep my notes from college? I don't think I need those. I've not looked at them since college.
Yeah.
It's just stupid, but they're in a file drawer.
Yeah.
You know?
I've got some Sports Illustrated, you know, and that from back in the day that are, you know, have some famous things on them. And I think, you know, every time we clean the attic, I look at those and go, oh, that's cool. But
that's so funny you said that. A couple nights ago, Jonathan and I were talking, and I forgot what we were talking about, but somehow I said, well, you know, I have that first Sports Illustrated when Jordan won his first championship. I still have that. He goes, no, you don't. I said, yeah, I have the Dream Team ones also, and I have like four of them from those Chicago days. And he goes, well, why are you not giving me those? And so I went upstairs, found them, brought them downstairs. We were all looking at them, laughing at them. And Jacob's there, and Jacob goes, okay, that one's worth $8. That one's worth $9. And honestly, there was a part of me that 30 years ago was thinking, these are going to be really worth something one day.
And they are. $17 for two of them.
Yeah, so I think they may be in the bonus room. They may be in the garbage, too.
Yeah.
I collected NASCAR stuff for a while when I was in the NASCAR thing in the late 90s. And they had these collector's edition. It's just all marketing. So I had these little NASCARs in these special boxes, never opened them. I've moved them from here to there. After that conversation with John and Jake, I thought, I wonder what those are worth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing.
They're not worth anything. So now actually they're worth a lot because my grandkids will never listen to this because I've got like eight of them. So this Christmas I'm giving each of the grandkids one of those just as an extra gift.
Oh, wow.
Because they love playing with little.
Okay.
Race car tracks.
They won't even know what they are. Yeah, they're just a little toy car.
Yeah, and that's basically what it is.
Okay. But That's good.
I'll probably cry when I get away going, I thought this was going to be worth so much. I'm kidding. That's my retirement. But what I did know that I didn't do is I knew that land was going to be really valuable in Middle Tennessee when I moved here in 1999 because I saw that happen in the western suburbs of Chicago. But I didn't buy an inch of land, and I really wish I would have. Mm. Sarah and I went driving around the country last night, and we were out on Old Hillsboro. And we have some mutual friends that owned a couple of different farms out there back in the early 90s, or late 90s, early 2000s. And I remember when one of them had their neighbor was selling like 12 acres, and gosh, it was like under $500,000. And I remember thinking, gosh, that'd be so cool to own. Well, I can't afford that. You know, probably just sold for $15 million the other day. I mean, it's just crazy what land has done here. So I invested in the wrong things is what my point is.
Yeah. I mean, it's hindsight's 20/20 on that kind of stuff,
always
though.
Is, you know? Isn't it? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I think we'd all like a do-over on some of that. But you got to be, you know, you can go broke in a hurry doing that, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we had a crystal ball, it wouldn't be any fun.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And you live with the moment you're in.
Yeah.
Good, bad, and ugly.
That's right.
All right. A little bit of ramblings today.
Yeah. Different topics today.
That's right.
Work. Season one finale.
It may very well be. Yeah. Well, summertime is here. I know we've talked about that. Maybe we do take a break. I tell you what, we'll take a break. We just make a decision. Unless, like, we just get overwhelmed from our massive listenership about our need to continue for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, what's the purpose of taking it? Why would you take a break?
Oh, I don't know. I just said that because I thought it'd be create need in the marketplace for them to rise up. And, no, you can't.
Yeah, like the encore from a band, you know?
Yeah, that was our finale. Not really.
Come back out. Yeah. Season finale. Okay, yeah, we can think about that.
No, I'm up for whatever.
Yeah, we'll keep going. We'll have to think about some things. One thing we are going to do, and I don't know how to do this, I mean, I know how to do it. I don't know what the most efficient way to do it is. We get a lot of questions. And so compilate questions and answer the questions one day on one of the episodes.
Yeah.
That'd be good.
Let's do that. Okay.
All over the board.
Yep.
So send your questions in to, I have no idea where to send them in or how to do them.
Rearviewmirror25@gmail.com.
There you go.
Rearviewmirror25@gmail.com.
Okay.
And shoot, yeah. Blow
email
up our inbox.
Your questions.
Or you can DM them to...
Sure you can. What does that mean?
My Instagram or Facebook. It's a direct message.
Direct message.
Here, let me give you Steve's phone number. You call him directly.
Yeah. You'll get blocked.
All right. Well, we'll be back sometime, perhaps soon. Perhaps
we'll be back
not soon.
Yeah, we'll be back. There's no need to take a break.
Good.
All this momentum, there's no need to.
All right. Over and out.
Yep.